Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. I am Brian Nemhouse. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, all the places at Hawk Blogger. And it's always a fun Saturday when we get to catch up with a good friend, Jeff Simmons. How you doing this morning, Jeff?
I know it's earlier for you guys in your side of the country, but I've already done like a full day's work today. And I was just presenting, and our closest border is in Buffalo to the States. And I was like 40 minutes away from the States. Maybe I was going to go pop by the Bills facility today, but I was like, do I do our show from like a Starbucks? But I'm like, I don't want to risk it. So I ended up coming back home. So yeah, I'm excited. I just made it back in time, and I've already done like a full day of work today, and now I can keep talking.
Love it, man. Well, I'm glad you can make it happen. And it's gonna be a fun episode because I think you and I have both noticed this, that there's, when you get to this point of the draft, everybody's got a list of, you know, 100 prospects, 200 prospects, whatever. And generally speaking, all of it's just positive. Like, this guy has this amazing trait, or this could do, he could be this, or it could be that. And this is a bit of a tricky episode because these are all college kids coming out. I'm not looking to tear anyone down. I'm not looking to like say negative things. And I'll even say at the outset, it would make me happy. It made me thrilled if any of the guys we talk about today prove us wrong. But I think there gets to be a little bit of this game that gets played in draft coverage where people just say positive things about everybody. And then when they get selected by your team, they're like, see, I told you this guy was good. And I'm like, let's be real, Jeff. Let's put ourselves out there, stick our necks out a little bit. Let's talk about some guys that we don't like as much as what it seems to be consensus out there. And it's a treacherous road, but I think you and I can walk it. How do you feel?
Yeah, it's interesting. I was trying to kind of part two parts of my mind because there's some players that I came up with that I don't mind as players, but I don't like for the Seahawks and where they're ranked. So I'm trying to – I have somewhere like some guys going to fall into that bucket where like if it was another team and they took him, I'd be okay with it. But from the Seahawks perspective, I don't like it at all. So, and then there's some guys I just don't really see what other people are seeing. So someone asked me the other day, like, what are the things I've been most wrong about in the draft recent years? And there's been like me and you love John Michael Schmitz as a center prospect. And
yep,
he's turned into a pretty below average center and that was wrong. And so there's been things, Brian Branch, the guy me and you loved, we thought he's a sure bet. He's been way above his draft grade. So this is not an exact science. Too many people are not, and I said this on our show the other day, but the picks that we all hated, me and you were on the day three stream last year, were Tyrese Knight and Barner. We thought those were huge reaches, and they were maybe their best picks last year. So this is not an exact science, but it's fun to kind of get a feel for, and you're right, so many of the media people just like, it's like a groupthink almost. And there's so few people that go above and think differently. And because of these simulators, it's almost gotten worse because you're like, this is the defined range. And now it's like there's so much groupthink. It's crazy.
It is. It is. Well, we're going to use a few different systems here. You know, NFL Mock Draft database has consensus big boards. That's the consensus of a number of big boards. I don't know if Arif has come out with his 2025. I don't think he has.
I think it's closer to the draft typically.
Yeah, I've not seen that yet. So I think we'll use that. There's also a Bleacher Report top 250. It's pretty good. We've got the Beast from Dane Brugler. So we can kind of go a few different rankings that we can decide and see if we feel better or worse about players than others. But I think we'll start probably mostly with the NFL Mock Draft database consensus, which kind of goes across a wide swath of big boards. Now, Jeff, there's no rhyme or reason to how we're going to do this. You know, we could have done a top 10 list, and, you know, I don't even know what criteria I would have used to determine what it would be number one versus number 10. We're just going to kind of go ping pong back and forth. You name a player, I'll name a player. We'll explain our reasons. And we'll see if you and I see similarly. We tend to. So hopefully we disagree on some of these, which would be fun. But who's your first name that you think you see differently than the consensus?
Mason Graham, the defensive tackle.
Interesting. All right.
Everyone talks about him like he's the surefire top five player Like, he gets mocked to Jacksonville in basically every mock draft at this point. I was kind of thinking about this the other day. Where would Mason Graham have gone last year? Is he a better prospect than Byron Murphy? Like, the guy who I would have answered last year, funny enough, was Latu, and he ended up kind of playing into that. But I think Mason Graham is a good prospect, but he's talked about like a great prospect, and I'm not quite sure I'm there. I think he's like a good prospect, but like, he might have been like the 21st player in last year's draft. Like, I don't see a single mock that just doesn't have him going in the top five. And I look at him more 10th, 11th kind of guy. Like, I don't know if Jacksonville is going to end up taking him, and people are going to be shocked by this. I don't know if he's being talked about like a blue chip difference maker. I think he's a good prospect. I'm not sure he's a top five guy to me, and I've not seen a lot of people go on a limb for that one. I'm not quite there.
Is there anything specific about him that, you know, just doesn't jump out to you, or that you look for in a defensive tackle that you don't see with him?
He's a little undersized, and I don't see a lot of like the dominant traits that I see from other guys. Like, he's a good prospect. Like, he's not too different than, like, I don't know if I see a huge difference between him and like someone even like Braden Fisk last year, who went in the second round. And he's obviously a little more refined, played in a better team, much better against the run. But I don't see that dominant size or trait that the top five prospects, to me, he's not there. And maybe I'm completely wrong. If he comes down and he's like an Aaron Donald, I'll look like a moron. But I don't know. I get the feeling that Jacksonville's going to pass on him and people are going to be shocked by this. And he might go like 9 or 10. And that's kind of where I would see him. So I have not seen any draft really that does not have him in the top 5 or 6.
Yeah, he is on the consensus big board for NFL draft, mock draft database. He's number 5.
Yeah.
On the Bleacher Report, he is number 3.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He's talked about like he's a blue chip player. Mm-hmm. I'm not there. I think he's a decent prospect, but I don't think the difference between him and like the Walter Nolan, Derek Harmon kind of group is that significant.
Yeah, yeah. And Dane Brugler's got him at number 4. So you're right. And I really like what I've seen. I really like what I've seen with Mason Graham. I think he's going to be a very good player. I generally agree with your take, though, about whether he's relative to the other years we've seen. I'm not sure he would stand out quite as much.
That's kind of my view of him. Like, I don't think he's a bad prospect by any means. But he's talked about like he's a top 5 blue chipper. And that might be relative to the draft, but I've not heard anyone say, are we sure this guy is top 5 kind of player? He's just kind of assumed to be. I'm not sure he's that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's an interesting one. I love that start. And it wouldn't have been a name that would have come up for me. So we're off to a good start. I'll start similarly up high in the draft. This guy is the number 4. You had the number 5. This is the number 4 consensus big board player, at least on the NFL mock draft database. He is a little bit lower on some of these others. I'll go over those in a second. But one of, I think, the most polarizing players in this draft, his name is Shedeur Sanders, the quarterback. I've got some specific reasons why I'm really skeptical on Shedeur Sanders, to the point where I would be down on the Seahawks. I would be not supportive, let me put it that way, of the Seahawks taking him, even if he fell to 18. Shedeur Sanders is a guy that I think is an accurate passer, and I think that's a good part of his game. I think he's a decent processor, but he holds on to the ball for ages. He holds onto the ball for a long time. And when you have that as an attribute, you need one of two other things to offset it. You either need to be an excellent athlete who can break the pocket, turn something and nothing into something, you know, threaten with your legs. He's not that. Or you need a big arm. You need a cannon that can just fit the ball into tight spots, take advantage of explosive plays deep down the field. He doesn't have that either, Jeff. He's got average arm strength. He's an average athlete, and he's slow to get rid of the ball. And I don't see any elite trait for Shedeur Sanders. And so for the conversation to be, for a lot of folks talking about him being a top five player. And I see even some folks like positively comparing him to Geno Smith. I'm like, I think Geno Smith's a better athlete, to be honest. And yeah. I think Geno's got a better arm. So I think Shedeur Sanders, talent wise, is like a second round pick. And he may go in the top three. So that's a guy that I just see really differently than others. And there are some folks that have him lower. But generally speaking, I'm looking right now at the Bleacher Report top 250. They have got, where do they have him? My goodness. Shedeur Sanders, they have him at 23. And I think Dane Brugler and I see him a little bit more similarly. Where does he have him? He has him down at 34. Yeah, that's, I'm probably in the 40s with him. Is where I'd put him.
I think of all the prospects I can think of over the years, he's got one of like the wider draft ranges of any player I can remember, where he could go three, and I don't think that's by because of talent. I think that's by just desperation, and he could drop like crazy. And I bet you every team, if you like pulled them, gave them truth serum or something, I think the ranges you would get on him are so wildly different. And because he's Deion's son, because it's a quarterback, because of, I'm sure ownership would love the idea of him. He's one of the most, got to be one of the more crazy in terms of prospects, in terms of where they could go and how crazy that slide could be or how early he could go. It's what makes this draft so unique. I think he's the face of that.
All right. So we've got Mason Graham and Shedeur Sanders are off the board. Where do you go next, Jeff?
Okay. So I'm going to have a theme with a lot of these, and it's relative to the Seahawks. And something I look at the Seahawks right now, and I'll talk about this a bit later, but I'm going to go with Tet McMillan. And so some of the smartest people, people I really idolize, have a very different view of him. Like, I know Trevor Sikkema has him as his third-ranked player, heard his podcast this week. I know Mina said like she would run to the podium at something on Softy's show. I don't love the idea of traits dominant receiver. I think when I look at the Seahawks, I see a lot of like, we saw what happened with DK. He was a traits player. He was frustrating. I want some more guys on this team who are on that kind of level of just like crazy. They have a lot of like either high character guys or traits players, but they kind of don't have a lot of guys who are just like insanely driven and like kind of what Doug was. And when you're a great team, I think you need to have some guys who are, have a couple screws loose. And just with Tet, I see a lot of things that make me nervous. I see a guy who's not like a great route runner. He's like a traits-based player. He's a big, like his body type makes a lot of sense. He's very fun, but we've seen guys who like take plays off. He's not a blocker. The idea of him in the first round to me is kind of just going back to a worse version of DK, or maybe a similar version of DK, but DK won really with speed a lot. With receivers, I like the guys who are little, got a couple screws loose. They're amazing route runners. They're pissed. Like, St. Brown is probably my favorite player in the league. And I love Doug. Like, those are those kind of guys I love. Obviously, the Seahawks do need a big receiver. But people talk about, like, Tet McMillan, like, he's this sure thing. He's going to make them team better. I don't know if just putting Tet McMillan in does much to change your ceiling, to change much for your floor. I think it's kind of just a worse version of what you were before, or a similar version of what you were before. So I see all these smart people be like, you got to take Ted if he's there. It's a no-brainer. And then there's that quote about him like not loving football. I don't want to put too much into that, but he doesn't have the qualities that I look for in terms of like the kind of receivers who I know are going to be great. I think he could be an A.J. Brown kind of player. He could. I don't know if that's what this team is missing. So I'm not sold on that idea right now. And so I'm not in on Tet McMillan. I heard Trevor Sikkema's mock. They had him going fourth overall the other day, and they think it's a sure thing. And I don't know. I don't see it.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I mean, Mina Kimes is very high on him. Ben Solak's very high on him. There's a number of those folks that are high on him. And the one thing I'll say on that front is I've heard people say, oh, that conversation about not watching film was when he was a freshman or something like that. I don't actually know if that's the case, but let's assume it is. That doesn't change the fact that by default, he doesn't love ball. Like, you know, you don't all of a sudden like develop an obsession for watching film and being that much better. So I do think that's indicative of kind of a base trait of who he is. And you got to be careful there, man. You got to be careful. So I agree with you on Tet. We're on the same page there. My turn. And I'm going to make a general statement, Jeff, and then I'll give you, because I'm going to name a number of guys and they're going to be in the same category. So I might as well get off my chest, my overall feel. The amount of times I've done a mock draft where I have not come out with an edge rusher and people are like, you didn't get an edge. This is a great edge class. Why don't you have an edge? I don't agree. I don't like this edge class. I don't think there's anyone in this edge class outside of Abdul Carter that I think is a clear high draft pick. And some of the guys that have good numbers, well, they don't have as good of traits. Some of the guys that have good traits don't have good numbers. Some of the guys that have that are highly thought of, you know, when I watch them play either in person, like doing 1v1 drills at the Senior Bowl or other places, I came away with just a different impression than other people did. So I'm going to have a pretty long list of edge rushers. In fact, I might have to, you know, bunch a few of them together. It'll be the whole show. But I'll start off with a name that for me is just not that interesting and people are super excited about him. And that's Donovan Ezeraku.
Yep, that was my next name.
Boston College has fantastic numbers. You know, I think maybe the top sack guy in college football last year. And I was excited to watch him in 1v1s. I just wasn't that impressed, man. Like he did not get off blocks very well. He did not have a lot of, you know, he was not super traitsy where I was like, oh man, look at that explosion. Look at his counter. Look at his power, his speed to power. Like I just didn't see anything that screamed to me as like, oh, this is going to work. Now, I think he's got a lot of tools and I think he can maybe develop. Maybe he's in like the Boye Mafe, Derek Hall class, but I think that he's not even those types of athletes. So at least Derek Hall had one tool, which was like straight line power. Boye Mafe is pretty elite as an athlete. I don't see it with Donovan Ezeraku, you know, and looking at the consensus board, I'm kind of curious where he is on this. He's at 32. Like for me, Donovan Ezeraku is a guy that if you took him in like the third round, I'd be like, okay, that's an interesting gamble. But I just see him as a little bit of a limited athlete and not going to translate that well to the NFL.
Well, this is one where we agree because he was next on my list. So, yeah, the way he kind of reminds me of just like drafting Boye Mafe at 18. And to me, that kind of makes my stomach turn. And I see him more as a second round prospect. And I've talked about this lots over the years. When edge rushers are going in the second round, it's a pretty big like buyer beware tool. There's not a lot of history of it. They're missing that elite trait or like dominant. Usually it's edge rushers, left tackles, quarterbacks. When they're in the second round, there's something missing there. And so he always felt to me at 32 feels kind of right. And it's like, you're kind of really throwing him up the board at 18. It feels like a bad use of value. It doesn't feel like it's helping your team that much. And to me, I don't see a first round prospect there. I think a lot of people like him because he's clean. And in this draft, there's not a lot of clean players. But sort of like Boye, like if you took Boye, like he's been a fine player. He's had some good runs of sacks, but has he made a difference to the team? Not really. He's been a pretty good success story as a second round pass rusher. But those are more complimentary guys. This guy feels like a complimentary guy. In the first round, you kind of want a difference maker, and I don't really see that. So every time I've seen a mock, or I saw like Jordan Reed say the Seahawks like him, I know Rob has been pretty high because of his character. I don't know. Yeah. He makes my stomach turn, man.
Yeah, he definitely, from a character perspective, like the person.
Absolutely.
Just I don't see it as a super high ceiling guy. So that's my next. Where do you go after? We've got Mason Graham, Shedeur Sanders, Tet McMillan, and now Donovan Azarakou.
Okay, so this one is going to be a theme for me. And I kind of alluded to this in the last section. But when you look at the, like, the makeup of the Seahawks, they have a lot of like high character guys, good but not great. Like, what makes – and they're kind of – they've been that team for a while. You look at like a lot of the great teams in football. I think you need a couple guys who have a couple screws loose. Like Baltimore had Terrell Suggs. Like Seahawks in their LOB days had some guys where they're a little crazy. And like, you can't just build a whole team of these high character, high floor guys. It's like, it's good to have as a baseline. But like, you look at the Seahawks, they kind of need some maniacs. They have Witherspoon, who's kind of like that, but off the field, he's kind of quiet. So this one's going to be a little weird because I actually do think this guy would be a good player. But I'm going to go with Will Johnson, the cornerback. And Will Johnson reminds me a lot of AJ Terrell from Atlanta, who's a very high ceiling player. He's been a productive player. There's nothing wrong with AJ Terrell. Every team would take AJ Terrell. But I look at the Seahawks, and I don't think just dropping in another high floor corner who's not a great tackler, who's just a solid cut, I don't think that's going to make a difference for them. So I like Will Johnson if I'm a different kind of team that needs a guy like that. But I look at the Seahawks, who kind of need a more high ceiling prospect, a more kind of guy who's a little screw loose. I think we need a little crazy on this team. Will Johnson is not a great tackler. He's a very solid cover corner. Michigan had a down year a bit last year with injuries. Was really good in 23. I don't see him as this like top 10 pick. For the different team that kind of needs some stability, I think like the Raiders, for example, he'd be a very solid pick. But I don't know, man. Like you look at Boye and Derek Hall and JSN and all these guys, and it's a lot of the same kind of character makeup, which is good for, again, but we need our Michael Bennett's. We need our Earls. We need something where people are kind of scared of what – that's why we love Jared Verse. That guy's got a couple screws loose. And you watch him before that Rams-Eagles playoff game. He's running around. This team needs a dude like that. And you can't just hunt that every draft or else you're going to end up with an insane team. But I don't know, man. Will Johnson is just a little too
– buttoned up.
Yeah. Not even buttoned up and just a little too like AJ Terrell-y. Like, that's not what I'm looking for here.
Interesting. That's an interesting one. And that's a realistic possibility to the Seahawks at 18.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's absolutely a realistic.
And see, I wouldn't hate it. It would just, it wouldn't get me. It wouldn't get me excited.
All right. I'm going to leave edge rushers for a while. I think what I'll do with edge rushers is a little bit later, I'm just going to list a whole number of edge rushers that I'm not as high on as other people. But I'm going to go a different position. And Jeff, I've been pretty consistent on this guy. And I'm going to have to be very clear about how I describe him because I think this guy's going to be a good NFL player. I think he's going to be a good number two receiver for a team. I just don't think – I think he's the wrong kind of receiver for the Seahawks. You know exactly who I'm going to say. Emeka Egbuka, Ohio State, a guy that a lot of people love. Some people think he's the top receiver in this class, like depending on where you look. On the big board, they've got him at 33. And by the way, Jeff, you're I forgot to mention your guy, Will Johnson, is consensus 12. So I see Egbuka as like a super high floor prospect who is going to run good routes. I think he's kind of a little Daryl Jackson-esque, if people remember the old Seahawk, like good quality receiver, but not a number one and doesn't have number one traits. I don't think he's not a run after the catch guy. He's not a power guy. He's not a contested catch guy. And I don't think he adds the right set of traits to the Seahawks receiver room. So a guy that I've been like getting higher on recently is a good example of what I'd be more interested in like the fifth round, which is Dante Thornton, who is a 4'3", 40, 6'4", and a half foot X receiver, who's basically a one route guy. He's a nine router. He's like a deep ball. Great. We don't have a lot of those. We have MVS and that's it. We don't have a lot of stretching of the field. Egbuka is not going to stretch the field. He's not going to change coverages relative to what JSN and Cooper Kupp already do. I really don't like that fit for the Seahawks. There's other receivers. There's a lot of other receivers. I'd be much more excited for the Seahawks to add than Egbuka. So I think I don't really question his rank. So this might be cheating a little bit. I just question it relative to where I'd be comfortable with the Seahawks taking him.
So funny enough, this is me and you had this conversation in January when we first kind of started diving in. And I remember I said this to you in our chat and I was like, I like Egbuka the player. I don't like him for Seattle at all. Yeah. And that was before they swapped DK with Cooper Kupp. So
yeah.
Again, I don't think building a team with three slot receivers particularly makes sense. Egbuka is exactly kind of what I was talking about in my last segment where I was just like, they have so many of these high floor, solid players who are not difference makers. He's that. Like, he is that. And I think, like, he's going to end up – he should end up on a team like the Rams or – like, Robert Woods has been a comparison to him a lot where he's just, like, a very good complimentary player. He's going to make a lot of important plays. For the right team, I think he makes a lot of sense. For Seattle, I don't think he makes any sense at all. And it just becomes a point where you have way – you can't – you have way too much of the same thing. I'd much rather take a shot in, like, another position. I'm with you. I've been saying that for a while. I don't think like a souped up Robert Woods is what this team needs.
So who's next for you, Mr. Simmons?
I'm going to go with Tyler Shook. He has a lot of red flags to me. I worry he's a guy just elevated by a process in a down draft year. Like I saw Diana Rossini's tweet where a coach said they think he's going to be the best quarterback in this draft. And maybe that's true. But I don't know. Like, this was not a guy we heard a lot about during the season. He's 25 years old. He's had a really good process. Absolutely amazing. Senior Bowl, Combine. I don't know. He makes me worried. There's a lot of red flags there. I'm not sure this guy's going to come in and be a difference-making quarterback. And so his stock is just rising and rising to the point where he's probably going to go early in the second round, probably in that top 10 picks. I don't know. This guy just feels like a guy being elevated by the system in a bad draft year, a quarterback. I know John disagreed with that. I don't know, man. I didn't hear a word about this guy during the season. And maybe I'm wrong about this one, but I don't know, man. There's some Brandon Weed in there. There's some weird vibes with him. I would have a big 25 years old. Like, how many years is this guy in college? I don't know, man. I have a buyer beware with that guy.
Well, I'm glad that we don't see eye to eye on that one. That's good. I think it really depends on where you get Tyler Shuck.
Yeah.
And so that's the tough part. And if I'm looking at, I'm kind of curious where he is on the consensus big board as of right now. Let's see. How low is he on this? He's 82 on this. He got as high as 71. So that's about right to me. Like I think he's a guy that if you took him in the third round, I don't think that's a terrible selection. I think ideally he's a fourth round pick, you know?
That we'd be talking, you know?
But I actually like the traits he brings to the table better than almost any of the other quarterbacks in this class. I think he is the most well-rounded quarterback in this class for my money. He's just his age is an issue. Mm-hmm. I think he makes some of the best NFL level throws. And I think that he's underrated as an athlete in terms of being able to get out on the move. I see like when Carson Wentz was good, I see a little Carson Wentz to him.
That was a good player, second round.
First round for some. I mean, there's like, yeah, I hear you.
I can't do it.
I can appreciate that. All right. So by the way, if you haven't given the show a like, click subscribe, please do. Greatly appreciate it. And we are making progress on Apple Podcasts, folks. So thank you to everybody who's already taken the second to give us a 5-star rating. We're up to 4.5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Would love to get to 5. So if you can give us a quick 5-star rating, would really appreciate it. Give us a review there or on Spotify, which we're already, I think, up there at 4.9 or so. So would love to get as many of those as possible. Really, really appreciate it. And if you want ad-free audio, all you got to do, sign up at patreon.com/hawkblogger. That is where you can get ad-free audio all the time for every show. All right, so we've hit a lot of position groups. I'm going to the offensive line next, Jeff. Mm. And I bet you're going to be able to guess who I'm going to talk about now.
I will, but I actually don't know if that – I think your initial take has kind of come back to life a bit.
We'll see if we're talking about the same guy. It's I think I'm going to trick you on this one. It's not probably who you're thinking. This is a guy who I was actually heading into the Senior Bowl. I had this guy neck and neck with Armon Membu as like I was really interested in seeing how they would perform at the Senior Bowl. And the more I watched film heading into the Senior Bowl, I was like, nah, I think Membu is definitely better. I like him better. And then I watched this guy block or not block in 1v1s. And I was like, oh, God, no, don't do it. Name is Ariante Ursary. Tackle from University of Minnesota. I've told you before, he gives me Jermaine Ifedi vibes. He gets off balance. He bends at the waist and he's really long. And I think he's got some bad habits from being used to being able to reach guys and gets off balance, was beaten like a drum a number of times by all sorts of rushers in Mobile. I don't want another Jermaine Ifedi. I don't want another guy that's a project as a pass protector. And while he's an excellent athlete, and some people, I mean, he is ranked as the 45th overall player on this big board. Like, he's pretty much on my do not draft list. I don't want any more offensive linemen like that. I want someone who's closer to a finished product. And I just don't think he's the one.
Yeah, you first brought up the Ifedi comparison. That was not who I thought you were going to go to. I thought you were going to talk about a guard from Alabama, where your initial take has kind of come full circle from the consensus, which has been an impressive thing to watch. Because at first, Daniel Jeremiah's mock draft had him like eighth overall. And now you're like, I think this dude's a second round player. And it kind of feels like that's where it's going. So you kind of hit that one right. But yeah, Ursary, you've been down on since you saw him. And yeah, I see the Ifedi comparison, man. A big athlete that's not really refined. We saw what happened with Anthony Bradford, where he had the great RAS score and seemed like a really cool player. Just didn't have it at all. So being a great athlete is not always the only – like a lot of the best offensive linemen in the league are good athletes, but the Ursary thing has a lot of the things that made a Ifedi who had like the very good – like Rob's used that tool to evaluate athleticism, and he was really high in it, and he just couldn't play at all. And so Ursary has a lot of that, and you saw him live. I've never seen him live, but yeah, you sold me pretty quick on that one. That's a hard one to stomach.
All right, who's next on your list?
I'm going to compare a guy to another former Seahawk draft pick. There's a guy named Nick Scordon, who's an edge rusher, who just seems like a high floor player with almost like a very low ceiling. And every time I've seen him mocked, I'm just like, that would not excite me. You know what he reminds me of? Daryl Tapp. Remember Daryl Tapp from the Seahawks, who was like a decent pass rusher, low ceiling guy, second round pick for the Seahawks. Not quite anything. He's actually a coach now with Washington. I don't know. Every time I've seen him in mocks, I'm like, that is not a guy I would be excited with. Like, second round edge rushers is not a position I typically recommend in general. I know he has some like inside out stuff, but every time I see his name in a mock, I'm just like, he does like nothing for me. And so I see like the Daryl Tapp, Lawrence Jackson kind of prospect there. And those are the Tim Ruskell picks that just did absolutely nothing for me. And so I would love to avoid being, you are always kind of chasing ceilings. And what I try to do with the draft, I'm not watching film like a lot of these guys are and saying this receiver, certainly I'm trying to figure out what people's skill sets are. That's why I loved like a JSN. I thought his skill set was so obvious to what Seattle did. I'm not sitting there watching eight receivers and saying, I like third guy better than third guy, fifth guy. Like, that's not what I can do. I rely on other people. Nathan, I know, does a good job with that. But I'm trying to figure out people's skill sets. And for me, a lot of these guys, like Scordon, just his skill set does not excite me at all.
That's an interesting one. And he's a guy that there's a pretty big variance on perspective. I've seen some people make the argument that he should be like the second edge rusher taken.
Yeah.
I've seen other people like just not as big. I have to admit, I have not watched as much of him as I've watched of some of these other edge rushers. So I don't have a strong sense of him, but I think that's a good call out. And like I said, I will be adding my other list of edge rushers to yours, here pretty soon. So that's a good one. We'll go a few more here. I think the next place that I will go, because you know, there's a lot of places. And again, just, if you're just tuning in now, the way that we're doing this is we're just telling you guys that we won't be thrilled probably if the Seahawks call their names on draft day. And that doesn't mean we're not rooting for these guys to be great. It just means that's our current perspective, and not enough people are willing to stick their necks out and say, here's some guys that we're not as high on. So that's the point of today's show, is to kind of, you know, put ourselves on the line a little bit and see where we end up. So next guy, I think I'm going to put out there. There's a couple choices. I'm having a tough time deciding between them. I think the next guy that I will throw out there, I mean, this is a bit of a cop-out, but Deion Walker was a guy that I used to be incredibly high on. Defensive tackle, 6'8", 350 pounds, like moves like a cat. Like, I was so excited for this guy. And then to watch him snap after snap after snap, stand straight up as soon as the snap goes off. And when you're 6'8" and you're playing inside, you just lose all your leverage. And so people talk about pad level. And when you're 6'8", one of the biggest things is you need to be able to get underneath, like underneath the pads of the offensive lineman. And Dan Walker just, I was pretty much out on him. And so he's a guy that, you know, a lot of people have him going in the second round, third round. Honestly, like he's like a fifth round guy for me. I think that there's obvious talent there, but I think there's a massive project. So I just see him, I think, differently than the consensus.
Yeah. You definitely liked him going into the process. The body type, the skill set, it made sense. But that's the cool thing about what you've got to do this year. You've got to go to the Senior Bowl, the Combine, get feels for people that a lot of us at home just couldn't have been able to do. So it's been interesting to see guys that you got like in front of and just your view of them just flipped.
And we'll see if like a year later I might find out, man, that really was misleading. But yeah, that's where I am right now.
Yeah.
All right. Who do you have next on your list, Jeff?
Tight end Harold Fannin. There's some guys who think this guy is like a dominant blocker. You get him in a Shanahan offense, he's going to be like a dominant chess piece. I don't know, man. I see a lot of like things about him that make me feel like he's just like a pretty mid prospect, small school, kind of one, kind of a unique player, kind of a chess piece that Seattle's not been able to fit in. I really like the top four tight ends in this draft class. All four of them. I like all four of them. And I think that's a big need. I think Fannin feels a lot like a lot of these tight ends that have ended up in Denver or New Orleans that have been these cool chess pieces that can really, and they just haven't worked at the NFL level. I haven't seen a lot of these players work at the NFL level. Like, I want a little more of a complete prospect. I know some people have talked about him like, oh, Kyle Shanahan's going to go crazy for this guy. I don't know. He just feels like a guy that like 2 years later might be just, they can do one thing. They're not that useful. They're a tight end too. You drafted them high. I'm not really sure what they do. And we've kind of seen that with Seattle way too many times. And like Seahawks were interested in a Juwan Johnson, who's at least a little more proven, but then I know there's a big need for 12 personnel, but I don't think this is the complete tight end that you want to draft at that spot. So I really like the top four guys. I think there's a massive drop off after that. And I think someone like Fannin's going to get pushed up for people who miss out. And to me, I would be very nervous if that's the guy they fall on, if they miss out on that top four.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. And I was also, Fannin was a guy that is supposed to be this excellent athlete. He didn't stand out on the field when I was watching. So I have some hesitation there as well. And I'll tell you, Jeff, increasingly, and this is going to probably surprise you, increasingly, Elijah Arroyo is on that list for me. Like, you and I have drafted him a bunch of times. There's a lot of people super high on him. I'm starting to have, the more I've like trusted what I've seen versus what other people have told me.
Yeah.
I I liked what I saw from Terrence Ferguson more than what I saw from Elijah Roy. That I didn't watch them. I did not watch those guys carefully. I was really focused on the offensive and defensive line. So it's very possible that I have a small sample size and was fooled. But I like Mason Taylor for me. I left with such a positive impression. Yeah. Elijah Arroyo, not as much. And so that's another guy like.
Ooh, I like Arroyo.
A lot of people do.
I think he could be a really good seam stretcher. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So this, like I said, we shouldn't all agree on everyone or else boring. All right. We'll do maybe a couple of more. I'll do one. You do one. I'll probably give you my list of edge rushers. And then if you have some others, you can drop those in there. So next guy I'm going to list is a guy that a lot of people are super high on. His name is Josh Connerly Jr., the tackle prospect. There's a lot of people that watch offensive line and are experts in offensive line that really talk about this guy. He was voted as best offensive lineman that the defense on his team at the Senior Bowl faced. He went viral for Mike Green running over him, but that was on the right side. He pretty much played the left side. And I just don't see it. I see kind of a little bit of an undersized guy. I don't see anything particularly special in his the way he plays. And I'm not super excited about adding him to the Seahawks offensive line. So he's a guy that on the big board is 35th. For me, you know, I'm just not super high on this guy. So he's on my underperform list. Who is your next?
Well, this is going to sound a little like a cop out because of what happened the other day, but Isaiah Bond from Texas.
Yeah. So you've been out on him before the news.
So at least I'm going to be fair on this. A lot of the receivers I look for are just very specific traits. Again, I love the guys who are just either dominant route runners or can win in a really unique way. I feel like he's a collegey receiver that I'm not sure translates well to the next level. Now, there's been some guys I've just been wrong about, but like JSN ending up hitting last year made me feel a lot better about my evaluation skills. And sometimes we focus too much on like 40 times and just I think it's a pretty projectable position in terms of who hits. And sometimes it's a better of where you end up. But I don't know. I've not been high on this guy. I watched a lot of Texas during the playoffs. There's so many NFL prospects on that team that I like. And he just seems like a very meh player at the next level, a third rounder that's going to turn out to be just a guy. And I would not spend a – and then the story comes out the other day, and maybe that's false, but – before that, he's just a guy that I didn't really get the hype there, and he's kind of fallen, it feels like, a little bit. And I feel like the league kind of has the same perspective on him.
Yeah. I think I've heard that from a couple of folks, you know, before this news came out. So I think that's a good one. I'm going to give you my quick-hitting edge rushers that I'm not nearly as high on as others.
Yeah.
Jalen Walker. Top 10 pick by most, hybrid inside linebacker, edge rusher. I just don't believe that's a good combination. I think you don't generally take your inside backers off the field in third down situations to rush the passer. And if you do, like, what are you? One or the other? And he's 6'1", 243. That's not edge rush material. So I'm not sold on this hybrid. He and Jihad Campbell, Jihad Campbell's much more of clearly an off-ball backer. I just don't like that combination of inside backer, edge rusher. I don't think that's a good hybrid.
Yeah.
I'm not super high on Mike Green. I know there's a lot of people that are. I'm not super high on him. I think he's a one-sided pass rusher. He can rush from the left side. If you rush him on the right side, he's just not nearly as effective. I think that he's going to be a fine player. I don't think he's a first round top 15 player. I've already talked about Ezeraku. I really like James Pierce from a speed perspective. He was the first pass rusher that I kind of fell in love with in this class. I think there's a lot of reasons why he keeps falling and falling and falling in terms of where people are projecting him. I think whether he's going to be a guy that you can count on is a big question mark. Jordan Birch was a guy that I was pretty high on going into the draft prep. And just, I think he's not nearly the athlete that I was hoping he was going to be. And he also didn't impress me in terms of his interviews and his just like presence. And so I've got some questions about that. Jack Sawyer. That's the one that maybe I hesitate a little bit, because I think he's just a good all around player, but I just don't see anything that's elite with him. And Princey Manamalian from Ole Miss, another guy that a lot of people are high on. I just don't see it. So I'm kind of more interested in some of the later day, later round guys. Like Braden Swinson might be a guy you get on day three. Savion Jones is kind of interesting to me. David Walker's interesting to me. Even like Fadil Diggs, like Q Robinson. There's some of these names that are later edge rushers that the value to risk ratio would be more aligned. And I just don't love this edge class, man.
Yeah, I'm with you. Mike Green was going to be on my list. I think he's become like the draft media hipster guy.
The darling.
The PFF was like, oh, Mike Green. And then all of a sudden he went from like 50 to like 10th on the PFF board, which is done by Trevor Sikkema. And I was listening to their mock draft the other day, and they're like debating whether to take him 8th or 10th. And I'm like, what? I think this has gone too far. So like from a Seattle perspective, I don't really see the fit at all. It's not really like kind of their typical size pass rusher. He's not really a run player. I don't think he fits at all. And I think it's gone a little much for me. But in that camp, I think Michael Williams is a guy I'm still a little uncomfortable. He runs hot and cold. Mm-hmm. I feel like he's getting pushed up because of a down draft year. And he's a guy where you'll see his range. Sometimes he goes in the 7 or 8 spot and they're like, oh, like this is a great pass rusher from Georgia and all this stuff. And I'm like, is he really a top 10 player, or are we just pushing him up in a bad draft year? And I don't know. I see a lot of risk to that player and not the highest floor. And I look at a lot of the edge rushers. Then I look at Seattle and they do need an A-level edge rusher, but they have four mm-hmm. guys right now. And to add a fifth edge guy is kind of a weird fit and spend a first rounder on it. So I'm pretty out on a lot of the same guys you are, but Michael Williams, they just had a visit with him. I'm guessing they're kind of looking at maybe a medical thing with him or character, but probably a medical thing. I don't know. That wouldn't excite me if that was the pick at 18.
Well, Jeff, before we kind of round this out, let's clear the boards, clear the karma, and name one guy that you like better than you think the consensus is. And it could just be a guy that of late you just kind of like high on. If you want, I'm gonna go first to give you a chance to kind of think about this.
Yeah, give me a minute to think about it.
My guy is someone. It's kind of a fun one because I never mock him to the Seahawks. His name's Derek Harmon. He's a defensive tackle for Oregon. I know coaches love this guy, and I love his play. I think he is going to be a very good defensive tackle. The only reason that I'm not like, yeah, the Seahawks should really be thinking about him at 18 is I think he overlaps too much with what they've already got in Byron Murphy and Leonard Williams. And on one hand, you can say, we'll just take more great players. And generally, I'm like for that. But I'm not like Derek Harmon. I'm not sure there's where he would get snaps. And so at 18, that's just rich. But I think this guy, he might end up being the most productive defensive tackle in this class. I think very highly of him. And if someone gets like if the Ravens get him at like 27, it will be typical. Like, or the Eagles, you know, like whatever. Like I think he's going to be a very good player. And I just don't think he just fits exactly with what how the Seahawks could use him. So how about you?
I think the one would be Mason Taylor, the tight end. I thought he was kind of like the fourth guy. I like Arroyo. I just said it. There's been a lot of talk like maybe the Seahawks would trade up for a tight end if like Warren or Loveland are slipping. I actually would be pretty comfortable moving down in the first round and ending up with a Mason Taylor, getting another pick and maybe moving up in the second. Like I kind of have Taylor as like a bottom of the first kind of player at this point, where I was kind of at him second to third round. I've gotten progressively more comfortable with him as a player to the point where if they weren't comfortable with the Gray Zabel and they were not comfortable with the Donovan Jackson and they wanted that tight end, I see such a big drop off that I would be comfortable moving out of 18, moving down and going with a guy like him. And so I would not have been that high before on him. I had him at like a 52 kind of level. But the more I study into him and Arroyo, if they don't get that first two group, ideally they're still taking offensive line somewhere with one of these picks. But if they don't, I like that idea more than taking like a receiver at 18.
Yeah. 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 I'm very high on Mason Taylor. I think the only thing that scared me was I've seen some really bad tape of him trying to block. And I just assumed when I saw his body type, I'm like, this guy must be a monster as a blocker. He's not yet, but he's got the bloodlines. He's got the traits. You know, he talked about the combine, you know, he and his dad, his mom, like they're all athletes. Like there's just constant competition going on in the household. It's just a sports family. And this guy, he's going to be a really good NFL player. Yeah, I think that's a great call.
The other one for me would have been Tyleek Williams, the defensive lineman for
Miami. He's really come on strong for me.
I was not even looking at him. And I know I remember one of our earlier mock drafts with Griff or Rob, and they took him. And I'm like, what? Like, I hadn't really thought too much about him. And then the more I've studied, and I think Nathan from our show the other day was like, why is Tyleek Williams that different than Kenneth Grant? And the more I've kind of dove in, and I really like him. And so I had him in one of our mocks last Saturday. And like, if they come out with him at 50 or 52, to me, like, I'm very comfortable with that pick. That was not something I would have been comfortable a month ago.
100%. I'm right there with you. Do you have time for a quick mock?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Sweet spot.
Let's do it. We're going to use it. Have you done the Draft Network sim?
No, I saw you doing a couple the other day, and it's very different. So
it is very different. That's why I wanted to do it. It's a little slow.
But my buddy's at 3 and 4.
We get a minute. There's a clock. So the pressure's on. And here we go. It is a little bit more deliberate in how it – like this is fast, the fastest it will go for what it's worth.
So we can't trade, really, can you?
We're not going to do trades. We'll just do our picks. We're on the clock. 1 minute, Jeff. And there's your guy, Will Johnson, sitting there. Colston Loveland, Jahad Campbell, Michael Williams talked about, Kelvin Banks, Donovan Jackson. There's Mike Green.
Oh, I see Zabel.
Zabel's down there. What do you do? What's in the conversation? For me, it's Kelvin Banks and Gray Zabel are in the conversation, and Colston Loveland. Those are probably
those are the three.
And what do you lean?
I'd probably take Zabel. But
yeah.
Banks, again, I'll be honest, I've not spent a lot of time on him. I know our buddy Nathan loves him. I was asked about him the other day. I need to dig more into him. So if you want to overrule me on that one, I'm okay with it.
We haven't taken Banks a lot, and I think I just really like Banks. So let's take Banks as a departure from what we normally do. I took Colston Loveland first recently, and I actually really liked the class that I came out with.
Which surprised me. A month ago, I would have hated it. I flipped on him and started with Nate Tice's article. I got to give Nate credit.
Yeah, 100%. That was a big part of it too. Oh my God. Gray Zabel's still there.
Oh my God.
And so is Tyler Booker, so Malachi Starks. Elijah Arroyo.
Like, it would be hard not to take Malachi Starks there. My God.
I mean, that's a crazy.
That can't happen. There's no.
I think we should avoid Malachi Starks because Mason Taylor's there. Tate Ratledge is there. We got the next three. So
I think we got to come with the tight end in one of these two, Arroyo or Taylor.
Well, let's take Taylor.
Taylor is our consensus guy.
Talking about him. Now we're back on the clock. We're not going to take Starks because it's just not realistic.
You could sell me on doubling up on O-line. You could sell me. Who else?
Javon Revelle Jr., the corner.
See, that would be an interesting take at that point.
That's been one of my favorites lately at this point.
I don't know if you want to go tight end receiver. Jared Wilson.
Jared Wilson.
I'd be tempted by Jared Wilson.
How much time do we got? We got 30 seconds. Let's take a look at wide receiver real quick. Trey Harris, Jaden Higgins is there.
I think I would push for Jaden Higgins in this scenario.
Okay, let's just do that. Let's do that. I don't know if that's where I would have gone there, but I think I'm interested to see how this plays out. And I don't hate those first three picks, dude.
God, I'd be.
There's a lot of upside there.
Yeah.
All right, so we're back on the clock. We got two of the next 10 picks.
Tate Ratledge and Wilson.
Yeah. So I think one of those has got to be the pick, right?
Yeah. Like, do you want to double up on guard or take the center? I think you take
the center, right?
Yep.
I'm going to take a quick look just to see if
we're missing any defensive players. It's four offensive.
I don't care. Like, best player, baby. So let's do that. Let's take Jared Wilson.
Dude, if this is their draft, this is an A+.
It would be fun. It's a lot of athletic talent. Jeffrey Bassa is tempting there. Trey Harris is tempting. You know, I know it's another receiver. Josh Farmer.
See, that would be an interesting pick. Like, Jack Betch being here kind of makes the Higgins pick a miss.
Yeah, let's look at interior defensive line.
Ooh, Ty Robinson would be a good pick too.
Yeah.
I like Caldwell a lot.
I do too. Edge rusher, which we're not particularly high on.
Corner, maybe?
What's that?
Corner? No.
Corner's already picked pretty clean.
Safety?
Safety.
No, we got 20
seconds.
Is Makuba gone? Yeah.
Makuba's gone.
I think it's got to be IDL.
I think...
unless you want Shuck here. Tyler Shuck is there.
No, we got to take either Harris or let's take Farmer.
Yeah, let's take Farmer. We need some defense.
Let's take Farmer. All right.
So I think the only thing we might have messed up was the Higgins pick at two, because we could have got a good receiver at that spot.
I think maybe. But I'm not going to be upset with Jaden Higgins being the guy.
No, if you add Higgins and Taylor to this offense with Banks and Wilson, ooh.
Man, that timer, doesn't that add a little extra stress?
Oh, my God. The whole thing is different. You can completely manipulate the board.
All right. So now we're in fourth round. I mean, I don't hate Jordan Burch at this point.
No. Caldwell's still there. I would consider Dublin up there.
Yeah. We've got Jaden Blue, the running back. Ashton Gillette.
My quarterback could be an option here.
Quarterback, you get Kyle McCord.
Could double up on guard.
Yep. There's Dante Thornton, my little speedster. CJ West is a really...
I like CJ West. He was a player I almost thought at that list when you said, who do we like that's growing on you?
Yeah. Do we want to double up there?
I do, because I think if you get cleaned out pretty quick on D-line.
I think you're right. Let's just take a quick look
at IDL. Do you like West or do you like Caldwell?
I'm going to pause this. I'm cheating. Sorry. I'm pausing. Yeah. I like Caldwell better.
Me too. And because they need a nose tackle. If you don't get Caldwell in the next pick, the list just looks so different.
Okay. Here we go. We're going to take Caldwell.
Yeah. Like, we fixed our offensive line. We've added depth on defensive line. We've added skill position talent.
Well, and the defensive line group is so talented. Willie Lampkin told me that Josh Farmer was the toughest guy that he had to block in the ACC.
Yeah, he's an underrated player, and a lot of people talk about him.
All right, so here we are, fifth round. We've not taken a corner.
So you're on D-line, yeah. We need a linebacker.
Oh, wait, sorry. It's all. Yeah, let's get back to all.
Quinn Ewers.
We could take a quarterback. I think we should take a quarterback, one of these guys. Which quarterback?
I like McCord better than yours.
Done. All right, we're back on the clock. And then, I mean, I think Bahashal Tootin.
Yeah, this is a good spot. Like, they need explosive. They need a returner. Chris Paul, you didn't have the best selling point on your show. Thornton might be a good spot here, too.
Thornton's a good one in terms of taking the top off. David Walker, the edge.
Yeah, you've liked him the whole time.
What do you make the call here, Jeff? Where would you go?
I would go Tootin.
Yeah, I think that's a good pick. I think that guy.
I think he could be a returner for you right away. I think it opens up a piece you just don't have in the offense. And then I think you can fill out a second receiver in the seventh.
We have not gone linebacker or corner.
Yeah,
I think there's also room to add another receiver if we want.
Yeah, I think that's our decision in seven.
All right, Jackson Haas, the best blocking tight end, is not bad. Yeah, that would be.
Any receivers you still
Jack Heiser.
Ooh, that's got to be high on the list.
I think we should take him.
We need a linebacker.
And then last pick.
Do we need a corner? Do we want a receiver?
Let's see.
Will Rogers, I just saw. I don't think we're taking him.
I like Q Robinson as an edge player. He's one of those later round edge players I like. There's Jalen Conyers, who is the guy that plays fullback.
That would be a fun idea.
Jordan Phillips is a fantastic get. He's going to the seventh round. Crazy. Yeah, that sounds crazy. Fadil Diggs. Isaac Tesla.
So this is where you don't draft the corner. You sign Shaq Griffin after the draft, and you push that need to next year.
Yeah, it doesn't look like corner is.
I'm guessing that's kind of in their cards. If they probably told him if the draft gets away, we're going to sign you, and you're fine there for a year.
Ozzie Frazier's still there.
Oh God, we got to take Ozzie Frazier.
All right, done. All right, dude.
Our seventh round was incredible. Look at that.
That's but this is fun because it's a different, you know. Everyone's like, oh, this mock draft has it all wrong. And it's like, well, they're all kind of off. But how do you feel about this class, Jeff?
This is the best mock draft I've done in the 3 months. This is my favorite one we've done. We hit every area of the team I would have wanted. Again, I need to study more about Banks and his projection as a guard. But in terms of getting what we needed to do to get Banks and Wilson. To get Wilson, like, third round would be incredible. And Ratledge was there in this mock. But to get two offensive linemen, two really good skill position group to make that more complete. And I think Higgins is the kind of receiver that I think pairs really well with what they have. And then adding defensive line depth, which they have a lot of snaps to fill. Taking the quarterback flyer and then some really high upside day three guys. To me, this is the best mock we've done in all of them. I have this as an A+.
I like this one, and I think you're right. This puts pressure on the Higgins pick, and I think his floor is lower than a lot of the other guys that we've talked about, which is, makes me nervous. But I think he's just a perfect. He is absolutely the X guy, X receiver body type that you're missing. So I don't think it's bad, and if there's a little bit more like playmaking in some of there, I think I'd be more excited. I like the Bahashal Tootin pick because he adds that breakaway big play ability. And like you said, as a returner as well, even if he's not getting snaps in the backfield right away, I think he's a great outside zone fit. He's kind of a one cut, and if the hole's there, he's going to go a long way. And then I actually really like the interior defensive line back-to-back picks there. And Farmer is really talented. He's a guy that can't – like, he could take Mike Morris's spot, for example.
Exactly.
You know? And then Jamari Caldwell is a guy that, you know, you and I both like. As – like, his best snaps, when I looked at it, his best grades were when he was the A-gap guy. So he's just – he's at his best as a nose. And I think he also brings a little bit more pass rush than some of the other nose tackles. But I mean, the seventh round, Jack Kaiser and Ozzie Frazier, that seems unrealistic, but
that seems like it could be your fifth round.
Exactly. I like those guys. So I'm really curious. Watch some Kelvin Banks, especially watch him on the move. Watch him on screen passes where he's downfield blocking. He is the thing that makes me most excited about him is when he's out in space, he is massive. He's like 330, and he can target. Like, he can pick out smaller guys and just crush them. So I think his fit as a guard in an outside zone scheme is awesome. And I think his ceiling is higher than Gray Zabel. It's higher than Donovan Jackson's. I think the question is, you're having to project him as guard a little bit more question mark there. And I'm not sure I really see him as a tackle at the next level. So if he doesn't work out at guard, you could have, you know, a James Carpenter kind of situation on your hands there. But I think he's a much more coordinated athlete than James Carpenter was when he was with the Hawks. But yeah, that's a good one, man. That's a good one. It is going to be a big frigging trust fall if that first pick isn't an offensive lineman.
It is. It is. That's going to – that day break between round one and round two is going to be the most high-stress day we've had as a Seahawks fan in a while.
Yeah.
John's got more balls than a lot of people do, and some things isn't bad on those things, but if I'm him, I'm just taking the offensive lineman and getting him off my back, you know?
Exactly. I mean, it's going to take a lot of guts for him to not.
Like after going, signing no one in free agency there.
Yeah.
To not take one at 18. And they're probably going to have to risk either moving up or something like that. But I think that one day, especially if they take a receiver or someone that people don't like, might be the most insane day in Seahawks Twitter we've had in a while.
Yes. All right, we got a couple of super chats. Let's get to those. Hawks fan Mattman says, will it be awkward to interview players you're not high on if the Seahawks draft them? No. And, you know, I think they could choose to make it awkward. But part of my job is to evaluate players, evaluate coaches, evaluate GMs, evaluate owners, and have my perspective. And it's an odd job for me, and it's an odd job for the people to have this thing where everyone's kind of criticizing or critiquing, I guess is the word I was looking for, your job performance all the time when they're not even an expert at what you do. So my approach here is always just to try to be respectful and to try to find common ground. And ultimately, I will always, pretty much for everyone, whether it's sports or otherwise, I will always root for people to be better than I think they are, even if I have a negative perspective. The world's better if that's the case. I don't mind being wrong. I'd much rather be wrong and have someone be good than be right and have someone be bad, especially if they're going to be playing for the Seahawks. So I think so far that's been relatively, you know, DK Metcalf and I didn't get off on a particularly good footing, and I think we did fine the rest of the season. So we'll see how that goes. All right. Brian Cole, please buy Jeff a better microphone.
I thought we were past this.
I thought we were too. I've heard this from a couple folks. Jeff, if we need to get you a better microphone, we will. I like the way you sound, man.
I thought we were past this. We got this fancy headset I'm wearing every week. I've heard, I don't know, maybe I'm missing something. I don't listen to myself talk very often.
Well, I'll take a listen and see if I hear any difference. But, someone else says the sound's fine. People are so nitpicky. No problems hearing Jeff Simmons for whatever reason. Jeff's mic is just fine. So I don't know, man.
We used to have a problem and we addressed the problem.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows? All right, Jeff, before I let you go, any comments on the Drew Lock signing or any of the other Seahawks stuff that you have before we wrap up here?
At first, I was very confused by the Lock thing, and I didn't really understand it because it seemed like they were very clear in what their kind of approach was. They had Darnold's a no-question starter. Howell is the backup, and then maybe you'd bring in a rookie to compete with Howell, and maybe Howell gets knocked off the roster. I think this last year was contract.
Mm-hmm.
Then all of a sudden, Drew Lock shows up, and I'm like, the numbers just don't make sense. And John kind of supported the quarterback class the day before, but if you really listen to that answer, it's total nonsense, in my opinion. But now I just, after thinking about it for like an hour, I'm like, this just is more of a reflection on Howell than anything else. I think Howell's going to get traded before the draft. And if he does, it's going to be for nothing, like the equivalent of a ham sandwich. So I think this idea that like people were like, had all these takes that the Seahawks signed Drew Lock. To me, it makes no sense. Like Drew Lock is a perfectly adequate backup quarterback. Literally had a game last year. I think Mike Duggar put it out there. That was like one of the highest passing EPAs of the season. It was the weirdest game of the year. It made no sense. It actually cost the Giants the number one pick. But what you want of your backup quarterback is someone who's well-liked, who's not a high-maintenance guy, who could come in and go 500 if the worst case happens. I think Lock is a totally adequate. I know because of the whole Geno Lock thing, it's weird, but I'd much rather have Drew Lock than Sam Howell as a backup quarterback at this point. Mm-hmm. So when it's kind of take the people I heard were very worked up. To me, it's like one of those things that's like his contract was 2 years, $5 million max. So it's low level backup. But I think Locke's a fine backup. Like, I don't give a shit. Like, I'll be honest, I don't give a shit who the backup quarterback is if it's not a prospect. Like, Drew Locke, Sam Howell, it's all the same shit to me. People are like, well, they gave up a third for Howell. They didn't give up a third. Stop saying that. They traded a third for a fourth, the second pick of the fourth round. It's like a 30-pick drop. And they end up getting another trade out of that. So that's irrelevant. You should be taking flyers on quarterbacks. That's the whole point of this thing. But who cares? Like, who cares? It's Drew Locke versus Sam Howell. And if they draft him, that guy might not even make the team. So I saw all these people worked up about it. Like, oh, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a chance that John Schneider might have made a wise move here where they've got a bunch of quarterbacks on that roster and there's other teams that may be looking for quarterback depth, and you go into this draft and either teams will get who they're looking for or they won't. And maybe even during the draft, before the draft, after the draft, maybe Minnesota wants Jaren Hall back. Maybe they want Sam Howell. Maybe there's another team that's willing to trade like a sixth round pick. I'm not talking about anything big, but maybe you get some draft capital and you basically will have paid Drew Locke maximum $5 million over 2 years to buy a draft pick or two. And I think that that would be wise money to do that. And you've upgraded the backup quarterback position. I don't think this has any effect on the Seahawks drafting a quarterback. Do you?
No. My whole read is that Howell is the one this affects.
Yeah. Yeah. So I still think they do that. And yes, I mean, the amount of people that are telling me John Rhys Plumlee is no longer a quarterback. He's listed as a wide receiver on the roster. I know. He also has only played quarterback in the NFL and only played quarterback for the Seahawks last year. And the roster is not accurate. Constantly, the roster is not accurate. And so until I see John Rhys Plumlee not playing quarterback, I include him in that list because that's all he's ever been. So there's some funny John Rhys Plumlee fans, Jeff, who like are like, he's going to be our Wildcat quarterback, short yardage guy. Like, I don't know.
Sure.
Like, okay. Maybe. I mean, I saw him taking snaps as a punt returner last year. He's certainly like an interesting athlete, but it's one of the weirder quarterback rooms. That's just, I think some relatively prominent Twitter profile said, what do you think of this quarterback room? And it was all the Seahawks quarterbacks. It's just this wall of white guys that are like, generally everyone's response was like, I don't know how I feel, like, not so great.
I also like don't really see a massive need to draft a quarterback this year.
No,
I don't understand this. Sam Darnold's 27 years old. Was the third overall pick in what was one of the better quarterback drafts with Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. And he's obviously had a tough career, but like he kind of is a prospect still. Like we don't know what he is. Like that kind of is your draft pick. Let's see what this guy is. And if it doesn't fall to you, so what? Like Darnold might be good. And if he's not, then go out and draft the quarterback next year. Like,
yeah,
I think we've kind of lost this. It's not like when we had Geno, like 35 years old, I get it. Like you got it, better start getting. But Darnold, like, he's still kind of a prospect at this point. And having the prospects in this draft are better upsides than Darnold at this point. Darnold is the third overall pick with tools and a lot of upside. And he's got his flaws for sure. He's not a sure thing. He's definitely not a sure bet than Geno was going into this year. But isn't he kind of the prospect?
Yeah. I mean, he's certainly, I don't know if I call him a prospect, but he is certainly a possible long-term answer for you at quarterback.
Yeah, like if he's not, draft the guy next year.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we got one more super chat. How do you guys feel about Jimmy Horn? Have you watched Jimmy Horn much?
I haven't watched him much. I took him in one of our mocks last week in the seventh round. There's some cool stuff he's done, but like I'll be honest, I'm not spending too much time on like seventh round receivers at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge Jimmy Horn guy. If you want a Colorado receiver, I like Torrey Horton a lot better from Colorado State. But yeah, Jimmy Horn's fine. All right, folks. Thank you, by the way, for the super chat, DJ. And thanks, Jeff Simmons, for coming on. If you haven't already, give the show a like and click subscribe. Make sure you follow Jeff at Real Jeff Simmons. I may or may not be back with you tomorrow. Tomorrow is a holiday for Jeff and I, so maybe busy. But if I can, I will try to be on. Otherwise, I will see you all soon. Until then, I'm Brian Emhauser. This has been another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. Take care.